Our third case for this morning is Design Basics against Lexington Homes. And we'll hear first from Mr. Hopkins.
Good morning. Please the court. I'm Michael Hopkins. I represent Design Basics in this appeal. The overriding error, before I get into the specifics, that the trial court engaged in was that they did not apply the standard summary judgment protocol. The facts here were not viewed in favor of Design Basics, nor were the reasonable inferences from the evidence drawn in favor of Design Basics.
What actual evidence was there that all four of the designs that you're alleging were the subject of copyright infringement had been uploaded to the Design Basics website at a time when Lexington might have seen them?
The record as presented is somewhat scarce in that.
Well, that's
issue.
A problem for me.
Well,
actually,
there's other evidence where an inference can be drawn as to the date. We do know from the registration certificates when these works were created and registered.
And when was that for the four of them?
I'd have to look at the registration certificates themselves. But it was well before the infringing activity here. It was in the 90s.
So your allegation is the infringing activity doesn't begin until when, about 2008 or so?
Correct. We actually went back and looked at about 10 years worth of plants from Lexington Homes from the date. So yeah, probably about earlier, probably the early 2000s.
So, but you're asking us to infer that because they were registered with the Copyright Office, they were also uploaded to the website without any further evidence of what was available?
Well, there is evidence in the form of a declaration that all of the plans were on the website. And I think the reasonable inference here is, why would a design company like Design Basics go through the trouble of creating a new plan, having it registered, and then why would they stick it in a folder for 2 years or 3 years or 6 months or 2 days? Why not upload?
Don't you
to
all
the
have control of that information?
Yes, sir, we do.
And there's silence?
Yeah, well, they wasn't put in the record here as to the date they were actually uploaded. Like I said, I think the reasonable inference is you create the plan and
we would have had an incentive to do so. That
Absolutely.
We usually don't say the fact that somebody has an incentive to do something in their own interest is evidence that they've actually done it.
Correct.
Particularly because I gather the current owners of Design Basics purchased the company only fairly, well, maybe May, not, May 2009 is not recent anymore, but long after these designs were supposedly created and registered.
That's correct.
So all the more reason to examine what one's predecessors might have done, even if you would have uploaded it right away.
Well, it's, as I said, the record is sparse. It's you're absolutely correct.
But that's a big issue, of course. Obviously, access is critical before there can be copying, because that's one of the differences between copyright and patents. In copyright, if you create the identical thing, you haven't infringed if you did it independently, whereas in patent, the identical thing does infringe.
Absolutely. But if you look at Judge Griesbach's decision, what he held was there was no evidence that they had these four plans in their possession, but there was no dispute that all the plans were uploaded to the website. There was no dispute that these defendants knew who Design Basics was, and there was no dispute that they had other of their plans.
But the uploading date was unclear. Actually, what the judge says is, despite the foregoing evidence suggesting they had access to the plaintiff's works in general, there's no evidence that they had access to the four works at issue in this case. And he notes that these five plan books don't have it. There are a couple of other things. And he's also not satisfied with the quality of the of the internet. I mean, I don't think you have any evidence, by the way, myself, other than the internet evidence. And so if that falls apart, I don't know how you can show access.
There are declarations from Mr. Cuso and I believe Mr. Dodge, which indicate that they were all on the internet.
When?
I don't have that. Yeah, that's okay. The problem.
That's the all problem.
Right. So let's assume you can solve that one. Okay. Let me ask you about my more basic problem.
Sure.
With the case, and in essence, it is in this field of designing single-family homes in middle range of expenses, what counts is so similar that a jury could infer copying? And what effort did you all make to identify what is actually original and protected in your copyrighted works?
I'll answer the last part of that question first. If you look at Mr. Cuso's declaration, he talked about what he considered as a lead designer unique and protectable in these designs.
So what's the answer?
For example, I see a
list of factors,
right,
and a conclusion. I look at these and they're the same. They're similar.
Well, no. He talks about the selection and layout of the rooms.
But the problem, I'll just amplify what Judge Hamilton's saying, because, you know, I had the same thought. If you're going to build, you know, a four-bedroom single-family home, you're probably going to have four bedrooms, you know, upstairs and a hall, and you're going to have certain rooms downstairs. And I don't know which things, how this becomes creative enough and different enough to be copyrightable. Common elements would not be.
That's true. What you court has to do is look at the definition of architectural work in the Copyright Act, because that gives you the information on the manner and scope of protection afforded architectural works. And what it says is the work includes the overall form as well as the arrangement and composition of spaces and elements in the design, but does not include individual standard features.
Right. So but there's also a lot, there are a lot of differences between defendants' designs and yours. And there are, you know, there are an awful lot of constraints on architects doing this kind of design work by customer demand, by conventions, practical stylistic conventions. I don't know if you're familiar with the Second Circuit's decision called Zalewski, 754 F3rd 95, a 2014 decision that really explores this in some detail, this problem of residential architecture, and where the court wound up writing that, yes, it's protectable under the statute, but you've got to be specific about what is protected, and it is a, quote, very thin copyright. And I don't see anything in Mr. Cuozzo's affidavit that really lets us see what's protected. Is it just an impression?
No, it's what he described. It's the selection of the rooms. So do we put in four bedrooms or three bedrooms or two? Where do we put those in relation to the other elements in the house? Do we have a great room or don't we have a great room? Do we have a kitchen or not? Where is that in relation to everything
You've
else?
Got 2,700 designs, right?
Over 2,000 designs, absolutely.
Okay. Now, I haven't tried to do this in a theoretical sense, but if you've got 2,700 designs for single-family houses, and if posting them on the internet is enough to support an inference of access, I can't imagine a case in which, and these sort of loosey-goosey look and feel similar positions of Mr. Cuozzo, I don't see how you can't sue everybody in the country.
Well,
and why everybody else in the country can't sue you for your
design. That's not the situation we have here.
Okay, tell me. We also have
a situation where these defendants knew of design basics.
They'd heard of it. Okay.
Their plans.
All right, but let's focus on the similarity issue here.
Okay.
And please address the problem I'm talking about how much is protectable.
Well, what is protectable is what is described in the statute.
But you need to be more specific about houses. You know, is it that the doors are, you know, 9 feet tall instead of 8? Is it that there's a finial on the staircase, banister, you know, what is it?
Absolutely not. Those individual features in and of themselves are not protectable. So I can't go in.
So what's so unique about a four, I mean, you know, you need to find something about the house that's not just driven by its function.
Well, yeah, but the...
Like you're going to have a bathroom probably off the master bedroom. That's pretty standard.
The Copyright Act does not require that something be unique or that there be some type of
intricate
design.
But some creativity. It also can't just be functional.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
the house would be functional if... Let's give you an example. Say four bedrooms and 2.5 baths, and we put one floor, and we put all four bedrooms on one side, or we split the bedrooms up and put them in each corner. We still have all the same function. You still have four bedrooms, you still have the same number of bathrooms, but how you arrange those elements in the design is what is unique and what is protectable. Now, that's not to say that another designer can't come in and come up with his own design independently created, and it happens all the time, that is substantially similar to mine. That's okay. If there's independent creation, they're entitled to copyright protection on that design. That doesn't lessen my copyright protection.
So how many single-family homes are there in the United States, you think?
How many? I have no clue. Millions.
50 million?
Sure.
At least, right? There's an awful lot of material to work with that's out there, right?
Sure.
This looks to me like a test case to see how thin a case can we put on and get to a jury and insist on a settlement, since litigation income seems to be the primary business model here.
Well, I would take issue with that. This company is in business to design and develop house plans and license them.
Mr. Carmichael said litigation testified it's a primary source of revenue, right? And that he was attracted to the investment because of the litigation potential that was in his deposition?
Well, could have been, but the fact
it was.
It was in his deposition. Is there, are these designs on Design Basics website behind a paywall, or do you just see them with a little copyright designator?
There are floor plans and elevation renderings that are available on the website if you want to construct.
For free.
For free, for viewing.
For viewing.
If you want a construction drawing, that's what you license, and they'll send you the construction drawing with whatever modifications you want.
Okay. So does the record show what kind of revenue Design Basics gets from sales of those construction drawings?
I'm not sure what is in the record. I can tell you that last year they developed 60 new plans that were registered.
So they are registering new copyrights as time is going on.
Absolutely. And they licensed over, I believe, 600 plans last year. And I don't have a reference to the record, and I'm not entirely sure it's in there. But that is my understanding.
Well, the copyright registrations would, I suppose, be a matter of public record.
Sure. Absolutely. So, as I said, you don't have to have a unique design to have copyright protection. And if someone else comes up with something that's substantially similar that they can establish was independently created or was created from a common third source, something that was already in the public domain, there is no infringement. The facts in this case, according to Lexington, is that they independently created each of their designs in-house. So they didn't say that there was a common third party. They said it was in-house.
And they also say largely the functionality point. You know, if you're building a single-family home between about 1,200 and 1,800 square feet, there's just so much variation you're going to have. People want certain features, right?
Well, but within there, you can have one bedroom or four bedrooms, a great room and a den or not. I mean, there are
a whole lot
of variation.
Some variations.
Right.
If you'd like to save a little rebuttal, that's fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Kowalkowski?
Good morning, Your Honors. If it may please the Court, there is no genuine dispute as to any material fact regarding access in this case. The evidence is crystal clear, despite allegations in Design Basic's complaint that they themselves directly gave plans to Lexington, that it never happened. They checked their marketing materials, their sales history, anything they could look at and said, you're right, we have no proof we gave anything directly to Lexington.
So then this is the issue about the actual physical plan catalogs and flyers and so forth?
Yes, and that is the issue of is in a way that Lexington might have had an actual access or
Did
even an opportunity.
Brown County people or...
They jumped from, okay, you got us, we didn't directly give to Lexington, through indirectly, through Brown County Home Builders or Hoyta Lumber, you might have got them through there. But that was all disproven. Some of the plans didn't even exist, 3 out of 4, when, for example, the Home Builders last got anything from Lexington or from Design Basics. As to the fourth plan, at best, they potentially showed the Home Builders Association got it a full decade before Lexington joined that association, and a full 21 years before Lexington built the allegedly infringing home. Moreover, it's uncontroverted testimony by the executive director of that association, who just by coincidence happened to be there in 1994 and today, the whole period.
That's lucky.
Yeah, that's job security. And said, if we get unsolicited plans, we don't keep them. We throw them away. We don't put them on a shelf for potential members to browse through. They're not here, even if we might have gotten them 20 years ago. That's uncontroverted, on top of course, Lexington's own personnel.
Well, that's why I said I think this gets down to the website one way or the other. I didn't see anything aside from the website.
And I would agree, Your Honor. And what is most important, well, or at least one of the important things as to that, in this particular case, Mr. Cuzzo, the person they offered to say there's some level of evidence these were on the website, was deposed in December of 2015. He was asked point blank, when were these plans put on the site? His answer, I don't know. He was asked more generally, what would it have been shortly after they were created? I don't know. He was asked, well, what's the procedure of Design Basics to put new plans on their website? Answer, I don't know. All they have is later, in an attempt to protect themselves from Lexington's motion for summary judgment on that issue, is the same Mr. Cuzzo stating generally, we put all our plans on the website. So there's no real proof these plans were on the website prior to the date Lexington independently created its own three plans, or four plans. So the other issue relative to the internet as the sole source here, it is uncontroverted, and admittedly somewhat self-serving, but it's uncontroverted that all the Lexington personnel said they never accessed the website. They didn't even know of Design Basics' website. There might be some proof because of one of these plan books that they saw that had Design Basics referenced in there among dozens and dozens of other designers they might have known of the firm Design
Basics.
But
I thought that there was evidence that indicated that they had heard of Design Basics.
Of the entity.
Of
what
the
there
company
was,
or whatever it is.
In discovery, Lexington searched its office as in response to a discovery request for any plan books of any nature. They happened to find 4 on a back shelf that they testified we didn't even know we had them until
this
we started looking.
Is this the one with the dog-eared page?
Exactly. So these are very dated plan books, not even Design Basics plan books. They're from other marketing companies with hundreds of plans, and a few of which happen to be Design Basics. So conceivably, Lexington could have, someone could have, found those old books, paged through them, found a specific Design Basics name on one. But they don't have a website. I mean, there's no in fact, the whole model of those books is you don't call or contact the designer. They're set up to call the marketing company who puts out the book. That's how they make their money. So no evidence of the website. There could have been evidence of the company's existence itself.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kolakowski, maybe you can help explain something to me that was a mystery. In Mr. Cuozzo's affidavit, in paragraph 13, he says, through inspection of CAD drawings and blueprints produced by defendants during discovery, plaintiffs found that on every document, plaintiff's CMI, I think copyright management information, had been removed and replaced with defendant's false designation in the title block. Is there anything to that?
No, I don't.
I mean, it sounds terrible. Right? That is, here's the drawing, we just take out the little block here and put our stuff in. That would sound pretty bad.
Well, first of all, that whole statement's based on a completely false premise, that those were Design Basics plans. They weren't. What they found on the website were Lexington's independently created plans that had Lexington's name on it. So it's a red herring right from the start, where there's no proof of the true exact design basic plan simply having their copyright protection mark somehow erased. These were Lexington plans that Lexington created on Lexington's website.
I feel like these plans must be very cheap to buy if there are so many, if there are thousands of them and there's so little room for variation for at least, you know, single family homes of a particular square footage. And maybe I'm wrong, but
I believe there are, Your Honor, and I don't even know if this is in the record, but just from my searching, I believe they get into the several hundreds of dollars to maybe a more complex plan creeps over 1,000 roughly to, you know, purchase the license to build that particular
model.
I mean,
I can imagine, you know, if you want, you know, a Frank Lloyd Wright style house, you might pay an architect a fair amount of money to design something architecturally interesting, but this doesn't seem to be that market.
I agree. Yeah. If I may, one more thing on the website is, not only is there no proof these plans were on the website at the times relevant to this case, and no proof Lexington accessed, it's mere speculation they accessed it. And in my view, under Seventh Circuit precedent in Sell, you always need something more than mere speculation. So even if these plans were on the site.
This worries me about the future, I have to say, because your position seems to be that the company would need to really dig down and find the IP addresses of everybody who visited the website and sorted and go through a very expensive process to see which computers were there to prove actual access. And, you know, in today's world, if something's going to come up on the first page of a Google search, or, you know, some people like other search engines, but a search, it's a very easy inference that they had easy access.
Well, in my distinction is easy access doesn't equal access. Just because maybe in today's technology, it's a little easier to sit on your laptop at home and pull up a plan than jump in your car and drive to a store or something. There's still something in common with both of those ways of getting access. The defendant has to do something more. It's not just, it's out there somewhere. It's out there easy to find. It's out there hardware to find. Our proposition is there needs to be something more, some bit of evidence. It may be not directly this defendant.
Why not just, you've heard of the company, it comes up readily on an ordinary search, and so almost a burden shift, you know, show us that you didn't have access. Because it just seems to me, in today's world, access is a very, as you just described, a very different proposition. You know, if you're the kind of person who likes to sit around your computer at 11 at night and do your cyber shopping, you know, you're a lot different from the person who goes to the mall. It's way easier.
Two responses. One is, that would be a dramatic shift in the law to simply say, defendant, you have to prove an absence of access. That would be a virtual impossibility to prove that negative.
But the law is changing in a lot of areas, whether personal jurisdiction or whether infringement of copyrights, other areas as well, to try to accommodate the internet, which is a bad fit with a lot of old legal doctrines.
Well, and I think there is a way that today's technology and the historic law relating to access and copyright can merge. And one of those ways, ironically, was suggested in Design Basic's own reply brief. They said, if you're going to look at internet as an access, perhaps other things a court should consider in that context is site hits, search engine result rankings, the usability of the website for browsing or searching for the protected work at issue. See, there's something more, that it's not just it's out there, that it's a prominent site. It has so many, even if it's not this particular defendant, you know, it had a million hits last month, or this plan was clicked on 50 times by at least somebody on the planet. Mm-hmm. Or this is such an, you know, you hit a Google search, and which I did, and it doesn't pop up on the first page or the first okay. item, not even close. So you need something beyond simply, it's on our internet site, end of story, because that would make the defendant's job virtually impossible to defend these cases, especially here, when you're talking something as thin as trying to copyright a generic standard starter home. A defendant would have to throw in the towel right from the start.
On this question of access, I guess I've been thinking about a couple of older technologies, books and songs. I mean, I suppose if it's Born to Run or Johnny B. Goode, you probably don't have to show access, right? Everybody
you heard it.
In this culture has probably heard those songs and has them in their heads. On the other hand, say the fact that a book is published and in a public library, available to public libraries across the country, I don't think is enough to show access, is it?
I don't believe it is either. I mean, perhaps if there was more, it's in a public library in your city for which you have a library card. Now you're inching closer to the opportunity to access. But again, my point is the mere proof it's somewhere is not enough. There always has to be at least some possibility that this defendant or at least the public at large is going to it, somehow stumbling across it.
Is there any issue of attorney's fees in this case?
There is, Your Honor. The district court awarded attorney fees in this case as to the issue, and we're in the middle of briefing as to the amount.
I see.
The one last thing I would indicate, especially with, you know, with this access issue, if I may, is, you know, to the extent you're kind of getting away with actual proof of access and striking similarity, which has been brought up in the briefs, that's typically in the context of something that's unique or complex. You know, Nimmer on copyright, citing Sell from this circuit, said that whole striking similarity is just an ill fit for something that builds on is short and builds on a repeated pattern. In that case, Sell, it was a song. But in this case, basic starter homes, which only so many rooms you may shift around. They're small, basic, built on a repeated pattern. So striking similarity as a replacement for access just does not fit well with this type of case relating to architectural works, potentially in others, but certainly
not here. You just have to, I don't know, the test, I'm not sure it's a bad test, but it has to be adapted to the nature of the material and what's protected.
Exactly.
Because these copyrights are so thin as compared to, say, Frank Gehry's museum designs, which are... You could tinker a little bit with that and still be infringing it. So.
Right. Well, and again, I think Your Honor mentioned earlier there was a question about, well, what's truly unique or original or creative about design basics plans? And I agree. Mr. Cuso doesn't say so. He says here are the 9 criteria he believes are important. Doesn't really say why. And then he says, and I looked at the plans, and they're substantially similar when looking at those criteria. Well, even if he happened to get one or more of those criteria right, in that item is protectable in an architectural setting, he didn't say what was unique about design basics placement of rooms or overall flow, which then again gets to the point of, where's there any similarity that they pointed out, let alone striking similarity? I think the district court judge got it absolutely right when he noted these are basic starter homes and there's only so many ways, as several cases have cited, you can move them around. Unless
okay.
There's any other questions, that's all I have.
All right. Thank you very much, then. Mr. Hopkins, I think you have about a minute.
Thank you. Very briefly. It's never been the law in this circuit, and it's only been established in a couple of others, that the copyright protection afforded architectural works is thin. This is a situation...
Well, it depends.
That's right.
It's not a general rule. Compare Frank Gehry or Frank Lloyd Wright to these designs.
True, but I think the better analysis is there's no requirement under the copyright law that something be unique or novel or that it be intricate. So if you've got a simple design, whether it's a house plan or something else, I think the fact that it's simple would make it easier to prove independent creation or that they copied it from a common third source. And those are jury questions that have to go in front of the jury. Once access is established and substantial similarity using the ordinary observer test goes to the jury. So counsel can get up and say, look, these are simple designs. This isn't rocket science. Anybody can do it. There are only so many ways. And the plaintiff can get up and say, listen, they knew about these plans. They knew about our plans. Look at these things. There are 4 of them. This is more than coincidental that all 4 of these are spot-on copies. Okay? Those are jury questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.